Any further on Friday, July 2nd, House Bill 5021 is missed. He is not here yet. House Bill 5047, Senator Ferrioli.
House Bill 5047 is Department of Land Conservation and Development budget. Under 5047, there's an appropriation to the Department of Land Conservation and Development. The agency manages our statewide land use planning planning program is a partnership between state and local governments that relies heavily on local comprehensive planning efforts to achieve the goal. The agency is primarily funded by a general fund that receives federal funds and focuses on management funds and federal transportation planning dollars through the Oregon Department of Transportation. The budget is being recommended by the Natural Resource Subcommittee and it totals $16.1 million, including $9.0 million of general funds, $2.8 million in other funds, and $4.2 million in federal funds. The total budget recommended by the subcommittee is 11% below the government's proposed budget. The subcommittee also established a special purpose appropriation and emergency fund for the department totaling $450,000 in general fund money. Including these emergency fund appropriations, the total general fund available to the department of public administration 1% below the governor's recommended level. The subcommittee reduced the agency's base budget by $300,000 for the issue and the funded department's participation in the community solutions. The subcommittee approved the addition of both positions that were members of the team for solving local development issues. The community solutions team is a central component of the governor's
Talk a little bit closer to the mic, a little bit louder, so thank you for hearing.
The positions are funded by a combination of federal transportation planning and 10% general funding. Is that better, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, you're doing good.
Sounds a little like the reading.
The Trust Committee continued funding the regional problem-solving program and directed the agency to report to the emergency board of the plan to implement and finance the rural lands mapping project associated with House Bill 2406. The subcommittee also restored the agency's attorney general budget by approving taxes, adding $175,000 in general funds for legal expenses and provided $500,000 in general funds for continued implementation of the landowner notification program mandated by voters in the November 1998 election with passage of ballot measure 56. The National Research Subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 5047.
Okay, thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Any questions? Comments? Department of Land Conservation Development budget?
Representative Trey. There was some movement of resources, reducing 1.5 FTE and then adding 4. I assume that department's okay with that and understands.
They are. Mr. Chairman, they are okay.
Okay. Further questions, comments? Any no votes on House Bill 5047? Hearing none and seeing none, House Bill 5047 is passed. Senate Bill 5515, State Fair and Exposition Center, Senator Cutaj.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 5515 is the budget for the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. The agency is responsible for the annual fair and ongoing exposition events and receives operating revenue from these activities. The total budget is reduced by 10.6% from the governor's budget, primarily from the elimination of a $1.5 million in proposed horse-racing revenue. The legislation was not enacted. The legislature provided an operating subsidy through the emergency board allocation in 1997 and 99. In 99-01 budget continues the subsidy with $698,697 of general funds. The subsidy supports fair activities such as agricultural exhibits that do not generate revenue. The Oregon State Fair facilities have not been adequately maintained for over 20 years. The legislature in House Bill 2153 approved $10.2 million of lottery-backed bonds to renovate the facility. Limitation for the bonding is in 5527, the capital construction bill. If that bill is approved, the agency will receive $2 million for urgent repair. However, the remaining 80% of the bond limitation will not be provided. budget notes specify that an interim committee will develop a long-range construction and operating plan for the fair. The plan will address contributions by Salem and Marion counties. The emergency board may approve bonding limitations after the plan is received. The budget includes the $1.2 million in lottery funds for debt service. The Department of Administrative Services is requested to unschedule $887,417 pending the action of the emergency board. The subcommittee recommends the approval of the budget of $14,404,038.25 FTE.
Thank you, Senator Cuto. Are there any comments, questions?
Mr. Chairman, I voted no in subcommittee because I feel that the report regarding the long-range plan should come in earlier. The budget note recommends that the long-range report come in March year 2000. And I believe that if it comes in earlier, like later this year, then there can be other options we can do instead of waiting to March to hear the report. Because by March, if we want to make any change, it's too late. The fair is supposed to start in September. But however, I didn't have a chance to discuss it. But I do hope that we can urge that report to come in as soon as possible and not wait till next March.
Thank you, Senator Yee. Any further comments, questions? Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 5515? Are you a no vote, Senator Yee? Okay, let the record show there's one no vote on Senate Bill 5515, Senator Yee. It is passed. Senate Bill 5547, various state agencies, disappropriation bill, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This committee has the Senate Bill 5547 combines the Secretary of State Audit Division assessment charges or changes the Department of Administrative Service assessment reductions and the Employment Relations Board assessment rate reduction into one bill. These changes and reductions were worked out with the three agencies during their various budget hearings. Because of the widespread effects of changes throughout the state government and governmental agencies, they were combined into this one single bill so as to keep the effects out of the efficiency savings negotiated with the other state agencies during their budget hearings. The net effect of the adjustments exclusions of the effect of the non-lenders funds is $2.3 million reduction cost of operation of state government. About $750,000 of that is savings in general funds, and the general government subcommittee recommends your approval of 5547.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any questions? Comments? Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 5547? Hearing none, and seeing none is passed. House Bill 5024, Department of Forestry, Senator Perry Owens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The House Bill 5024 is a budget bill for the Department of Forestry. It was recalled to the Ways and Means Committee after passage on the House floor, and after research subcommittee re-examined the budget and made several changes. First, the forest practice program reductions were restored, including the reductions for smoke management, the fish survey, and the planning management and policy staffing cuts. All personnel reductions were also restored. The department offered reductions in the assistance program and resource planning and the administration program, which were accepted and approved. Reductions were taken which eliminate positions that have been vacant for more than a year for technical adjustments and in the practices program for savings in other services and supplies. The protection program general fund mass shortfall package was reduced by $300,000, giving the agency $1.5 million in general funds for the package. That's down from $1.8 million. They also received more than $2 million in general fund in their base to bring it up to the 50% level, so there's a cost share with the fire protection program. The budget was also increased to include finance costs for capital construction after we were advised that capital construction was ineligible for the funding mechanism that we had used. The department's administrative efficiency reduction to 3.8% of their personal services supply and capital outlays. So we hit the target that we were aiming at for reduction. Total budget approved was
$183,241.53, 3.6% increase over the $77,999 estimated expense. Subcommittee unanimously recommends approval of the bill. Thank you, Senator Perioli. Are there any questions? Representative Schrader. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to thank the chairman of this committee for taking the budget back, and we really do appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, I think the thanks go on to the co-chairs for helping to solve that.
Appreciate the co-chairs doing that very much. Can I ask a couple of questions on the
board? Sure, Representative Schrader, as long as you compliment.
Yeah. You sure did a good job, sir.
However.
The $1.4 million general fund reduction, $612,000 was administrative and program savings, at least $800,000, and was unable to follow exactly where the rest of that general fund was taken out.
And I think that was intentional. I'll defer that question to our staff and our assistant attorney.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader. part of the reductions included were the $300,000 reduction in the fire program package that Senator just mentioned, the reduction in the package 146, which was not approved, but which may be a part of House Bill 355, Senate Bill. There was also a reduction in general fund for debt service. The sale of the CLPs is being delayed. And also part of the rest of the debt service for the sale of CLPs will be funded internally by the agency.
Thank you. I think the in perspective on the question, we looked to restore the programmatic reductions that we'd made earlier and focus more on services, supplies, and the cost of financing to achieve those reductions.
Follow-up question.
Okay.
I assume like in this budget, the $160,000 that's taken out of the part of that salmon threatened and endangered program, that and some of the stuff from the LCDC budget will be put in the OWEB.
Actually, that, the intention is to treat those in House Bill 3225.
Okay, right.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Brady.
Thank you, Representative Schrader. Any further questions? Are there any no votes on House Bill 5024? Seeing none and seeing none, it has passed. Senate Bill 325 relating to public employee retirement, Senator Perioli.
Thank you, Chairman. The Senate Bill 325 is a purchase of PERS service credits and payroll deductions. It would allow PERS members who by law may purchase service credits at full cost to do so through payroll deduction. Under current law, members must take the payment in a lump sum or must make the payment in a lump sum. This bill came to Ways and Means from the Senate Committee on General Government. You received testimony in support of the bill addressed to the desirability of allowing PERS members who wish to hold costs of the additional retirement benefits to do so over time. If approved by the IRS, the purchase was made in May for each tax dollar. The subcommittee believes that the purchase of the additional service credits should not include any cost to employers. The subcommittee amended the bill with the approval of the chair of the Committee on General Government to ensure that only those PERS members who are required to pay the full cost of the additional retirement benefit to make the purchase through payroll deduction. The additional benefit of the purchase includes the administrative cost of PERS. The subcommittee recommends approval of Senate Bill 325 as amended.
Thank you, Senator Perioli.
Representative Schrader. All right, sir. Question on the statement that no added cost to the employers. So am I to understand that in this particular bill, as a purchaser service credit, if you purchase all future roll-up obligations, but otherwise we would have to match as the employer?
The concern was that we'd be creating a problem for match later, but the law that created the opportunity requires the employee to pay the full cost.
Just a kind of a follow-up clarification for me.
Sure.
I guess what I'm getting at is there are lots of different programs here, and we have some where people can buy additional years of service. And I want to know if they're buying just their share of that service, or are they also buying the match? I mean, the argument's been made that the fund is so darn solvent, doing so good, that really it's all investment earnings. It doesn't cost the employer very much. But I guess I want to know, are we putting in any money, investment earnings, additional tax dollars, whatever, to match employee buybacks?
In answer to your question, the full cost of the retirement benefit, including any administrative costs, are being required of the purchaser of the benefit. So it's anticipated that if there are additional costs, a roll-up cost, administrative costs, or just service fees, et cetera, associated with this buyback now or in the future, the employee will reassess those fees.
Thank you. Any further comments, questions? Senate Bill 325, are there any no votes on Senate Bill 325? None and seeing none, go ahead and hear. Let the record show that Senator Hannon is a no vote on Senate Bill 325.
Next bill up
is Senate Bill 327. Representative Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 327 adds to the definition of firefighter certain employees of the Oregon Forestry Department who fight wildland fires during a portion of the year, allow firefighter benefit credit for that portion of time these employees are assigned to fight wildland fires. The department estimates that 260 positions would be affected by the bill, which are actually 73 full-time employees. The department reports that all 260 positions are exposed to direct fire line hazards at fire scenes, although they are identified within different position classifications. The bill came to Ways and Means from the Senate Committee on General Government. Your subcommittee, with the approval of the chair of the Senate Committee on General Government, amended the bill to reduce the fiscal impact by eliminating the retroactive effect of the new provisions and allow employees to purchase fire service credit. Employees choosing to purchase fire service credit must pay the full cost of the benefit, including administrative costs. Your subcommittee also amended the bill, again with the approval of the chair of the Senate Committee on General Government, to amend the Public Employees Benefits Board statute to allow persons eligible for state retirement benefits to continue to maintain and pay for their medical insurance through them. The eligible individuals pay all of the costs of the insurance, and there is no cost to the state. This amendment was an accommodation to TED to clarify language in the statute. Your subcommittee recommends approval of 327 as amended.
Thank you, Representative Leonard. Are there any comments, questions? Senator Kutap.
Thank you. I just have a question, Representative Leonard, about clarity on who is fighting these, who, what people are fighting these fires at the state level. Is there some criteria? I mean, does anybody go out and fight a fire just randomly, or some people
No.
are called in specially for that?
They actually, these individuals have in their job descriptions that they are also, in addition to whatever responsibility they have, going to be used in the fire season as firefighters. They do some training in the non-fire season. For the period of time that they're training and or fighting the fires, they would receive the service credit for those other, which is estimated, I believe, 6 months of the year. As I recall, 600 hours. I think you have to work 600 hours, but I believe they said basically it's about 6 months a year, so half the time.
That they fight fire.
Fight fire and or train to fight fires. Actively engaged in training.
Well, I want to be sure that for the firefighters, I want them to be able to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's working at a desk and or doing some other job but periodically go and fight fires.
They don't get it when they're at the desk.
Okay.
They do not get it when they're at the desk.
Okay. Representative Patrick.
What additional benefits is it? I mean, don't they get an early retirement if they're able to get these enhanced benefits, and won't that maybe eventually cost us? I mean, we've just had this big bump in public employee pay it for cities and counties and other people. Isn't that going to affect the state at some point, because these individuals will be retiring earlier and get enhanced benefits as a result of granting them these privileges?
Well, actually, the benefits they receive are exactly the same benefits that legislators receive under PRS. They receive 2% as opposed to 1.67. They can retire at 50 if they have 25 years of service, or at age 55 with any amount of service. It would be the same benefit level that we get, that police officers get, that urban structural firefighters get, that corrections officers get, 911 operators. These are individuals that are engaged in some very, I mean, they only get the credit at the time they're engaged in very hazardous activities.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? Further comments? Representative Schrader.
Are these individuals full-time firefighters?
They're full-time employees who, throughout the year, when they're not firefighting, do other responsibilities.
Awesome. What percentage of their time is fighting fires? And what's an example of some of the other activities they may do?
As I recall, the percentage is about half the time that they're fighting fires and or training to fight fires, and they have various responsibilities apparently throughout the Department of Forestry, throughout the other parts of the year.
Question, sir?
Sure.
So their status, and approximately 50% of their retirement would be based on this, or would they get the full benefit of firefighter status, even though 50% of the time is spent during other things?
They would get the portion of the time of their total service credited to firefighting as that higher benefit. They would get the other portion that would reflect their time as general service employees.
Okay. Representative Butler. Just one clarification. 260 employees, both full-time and seasonal, 140 are full-time and 120 are seasonal. The equivalent, full-time equivalency for the PNAP units is 73 employees.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Butler. Other questions, comments? Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 327? Yeah. Let the record show that Senator Hannon and Senator Qtub are a no on Senate Bill 327. Passed. We will now jump back to Representative Ross. She will carry House Bill 5021, since the Minister is not here, on the Department of Higher Education Capital Construction.
House Bill 5021 comes from the Education Subcommittee. It contains the capital construction budget for the Department of Higher Ed. The bill authorizes approximately $143 million for construction and maintenance projects. These projects include new facilities, renovations, or additions to existing facilities, and funds to address crucial deferred maintenance needs. Less than $16 million of this total will be financed by the general fund. Bonds, private donations, federal monies will finance the remainder. The recommended bill includes 29 specified projects on higher ed campuses and 5 system-wide categories of capital expense. The committee added 4 projects to those in the governor's recommended budget. Those projects include funding for a new natural resources and health services center at Eastern Oregon University, the library at Portland State, the Museum of Art at the University of Oregon. Except for the projects at Eastern, all these projects will be financed through a combination of private donations and bonds. The project at Eastern will be financed from general fund and bond monies that had previously been earmarked for deferred maintenance on the Eastern campus. Over the years, the state has made substantial investment in the facilities of the Oregon University system. OUS must maintain the quality of these facilities and must ensure that the facilities are updated to meet current needs and must address future enrollment growth. House Bill 5021 will help the system address all these needs, and I urge your support. We did hear quite a bit of testimony in subcommittee about the needs at Eastern for this new facility. They came forward with a plan to set aside the deferred maintenance projects that the Board of Higher Ed had identified on their campus in order to be able to fund the beginning phase of the facility there. They're growing rapidly. They need this, and it will not take more money than has been specified in the governor's budget. The other projects, the library at Portland State, the museum at the University of Oregon, and the new there are three other projects, and they are all being funded not with any additional allocation of general funds, but this gives them the authorization to go out and raise funds on their own. So we recommend your approval.
Thank you, Representative Ross. Any questions, comments? Representative Crater.
Yeah, the $11,596,476 for academic modernization repair, is there a general breakout of what that's done, or is that their general repair money overall?
That is the money that there is a list of specified projects, these deferred maintenance projects, and higher ed has done a great deal of study on which of these projects are critical to reduce future costs. If you wait too long to fix something, then the whole thing breaks, and so that's where they put the emphasis, was on the deferred maintenance projects, that if they allow them to go longer, that they would, in fact, cost the state more.
Is this the normal amount of money to be spending in this manner?
Actually, it's less than in previous biennium. This allocation is actually 50% less than the 1979 biennium.
Thank you. Further questions? Are there any no votes on House Bill 5021?
On the no.
Let the record show that Senator Yee is no vote on House Bill 5021. Passed. Senate Bill 328, relating to public employees' retirement. Senator Crow.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This is the last of a group of three bills coming from PERS. This bill authorizes the public employment retirement system to accept rollover contributions from other qualified retirement plans. The bill came to Ways and Means from the Senate Committee on General Government. Testimony received in support of the bill addressed the attractive nature of portability of pension plans. Community colleges especially believe in recruiting that this would be a real benefit to them if we had this portability. The bill would allow persons coming into PERS to roll over contributions from another qualified plan. Currently, unless we do this, PERS cannot do this, although people who leave the PERS plan and go elsewhere, theirs are rolled over by other states. So it's a kind of reciprocal thing that we're asking that can be done here. The rollover contributions are to be kept in separately identifiable rollover accounts and do not impact retirement benefits attributable to PERS membership. Your subcommittee, with the approval of the chair of the Senate Committee on General Government, caused one amendment to be prepared and put into the bill. The amendment requires the PERS board to establish by rule rollover account maintenance fees that are adequate to pay the full cost of the system of maintaining the rollover accounts. Your subcommittee thinks this is a minor improvement of the PERS plan and recommends approval.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Cho? Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Cho, would a 457 plan qualify? Did that
I don't know, and I'd ask our chair.
Is the 457 a government plan? If it's a qualified government plan, it would qualify. My understanding, it would qualify. It has to be a qualifying plan to qualifying plan.
Okay, and then if I could further ask, these separate accounts that they're rolling into, is it an account or
a single individual account each time?
Each time.
Yeah.
So each person?
If somebody is recruited and is in a retirement plan someplace else and wants to roll over the years into this plan, that can be done. And as I said, other states allow it and do it, so it helps the portability of retirement.
Okay. And then just one further question. Just to clarify why we would do this, what is the advantage?
The advantage, I think, community colleges say in recruiting people who have some experience in teaching who would come here who would be valuable members. It's an accommodation device for getting good candidates for government jobs.
Okay, I apologize. I just really do have this question. If it's a separate account and then they're building PERS, will they still be able to? Are they basically tying in with PERS to the effect that? Because PERS is really a good plan, it's made a lot of money and all that other stuff. So even though it's in a separate account that's coming from another government plan, previous plan, does it still get the benefit of the good, the excellent decisions, I guess, the PERS account has made and the building that it's doing?
I don't think that there's a value judgment between the plan that they've come from and the PERS plan with regard to that, but I think that they would benefit as part of the PERS plan. I'll ask our chair if he wants to make a comment on that.
Just by way of comment, the federal statute provides that all rollover plans must be maintained separately and accounted for separately, but they would be commingled with the balance of the programs, but just accounted for separately. And the concern here was that, number one, you do have the portability, but number two, that anyone that decides to do that would maintain their own costs, and the costs would be paid for out of that account that's transported into the state of Oregon.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further comments or questions? Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 328?
Well,
the record shows Senator Hannon, no vote on 328. Senate Bill 657 relating to waste control, Senator Crow.
This also comes from your Subcommittee on General Government. Senate Bill 657 requires the Environmental Quality Commission to establish by administrative rule a program to regulate the collection, storage, transportation, treatment, recycling, and disposal of septic tank pumpings, referred in the bill as septic. The bill also regulates the land application of septic. Before the program is established by administrative rule, a county must request Environmental Quality Commission to adopt such rules. The bill requires the counties to pay for the expenses related to the rulemaking process. Once the program is established, license and permit fees will sustain operational expenses of the program. The General Government Subcommittee approved a $1 other fund expenditure limitation and recommended that the Department of Environmental Quality request emergency board approval for additional limitation when revenue from the counties becomes available. The General Government Subcommittee recommended passage of Senate Bill 657 being voted.
Thank you, Senator Crow. Questions, comments? Representative Butler.
Just by way of comment and clarification, that only counties that would request this septic program would ever be required to come forward and assist with the rulemaking process, and that rulemaking process would be, they're encouraged within the bill to go ahead and utilize private resources and grant sources and those kinds of other applications of funds, so that they would not necessarily ever have to come from county general funds. And it was explained to the committee that these particular types of septic programs are about $750,000 in cost, and if one or more of them goes into the state to set up the rulemaking process and so forth, that could be built into the cost by the private contractors that want to put them into the county or counties that are involved.
Okay, thank you, Representative Butler. Further questions or comments? Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 657? Hearing none and seeing none, passed. Senate Bill 770 relating to unemployment insurance. Senator Kutesa.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Under the current law, the Employment Department will deny unemployment insurance benefits for claims filed by employees who are terminated for misconduct. This denial of benefits relieves the employer from subsequent claims filed by an employee. If, however, the employee terminated for misconduct does not
file for benefits. The employer who terminated the employee for misconduct remains liable for future unemployment insurance claims that may be awarded from subsequent unemployment if the terminating employer is in the base year employer. The base year employer is the employer during the time used to calculate unemployment insurance benefits and the employer whose account is charged with the claim. Senate Bill 770 allows a base year employer to request from the Employment Department relief from charges for unemployment insurance benefits paid on claims when the employee was discharged for misconduct connected with work. This bill requires the Employment Department to review the information provided by the employer and make a determination to grant relief from a claim. The fiscal impact of the bill is about $664,000 for the upcoming biennium. The Employment Department's budget that has passed both houses in the legislature does not include funding for this measure, and consequently the agency will either absorb the cost of implementing the policy changes in the bill or use available READ Act funds from the federal government. If READ Act funds are available, the department will need emergency board approval for additional expenditure limitations for the year 2000.
Thank you, Senator Tutep. Any questions? Comments? Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 770? Hearing none and seeing none passed. Senate Bill 870 relating to brain development. Representative Roth.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 870 creates two new programs. The first of these is the child care provider training program to be administered by the Department of Education in partnership with other agencies. The committee heard testimony on the importance of early childhood care on human brain development. The current research findings show a permanent negative effect on the brains of young children who do not receive sufficient care and stimulation in the first few years of life. The new training program will provide child care providers with important information based on these findings, as well as with information on how to identify risk factors for children and appropriate referrals for at-risk children. The second new program at the University of Oregon is the Center for Brain Biology and Machines. This is an interdisciplinary center with a focus on the study of information processing by physical hardware and biological systems. The center will help put the university at the cutting edge of research in these fields. The results of this research should be useful to such diverse fields as medicine, neuroscience, education, hardware, and software design. The general funds are not available for these programs at the current time, and the committee removed all fiscal impacts from the bill. The bill also does not impose any obligations of future general fund support. Both programs are authorized to seek federal funds and other outside sources of funding to operate. These programs are important new initiatives, and the Education Subcommittee recommends approval. And I think that the research in this field is moving forward rapidly, and I think that the seminar that Senator Bryant organized right at the first of the session gave us a lot of important information about the positive and negative impacts of the treatment of infants and young children on their brain development. And so I think that now the challenge is really to translate that research results into information that laymen can understand and that can be useful to child care providers and other persons who are in contact with infants. And since our whole focus on changing our welfare system has been to have everyone working, this has put new stress on our child care system, and I think it's very important that we do everything we can to make sure that child care providers are doing as good a job as possible and that we avoid the negative results of neglect. I think we've come a long way. During World War II in Dallas, Texas, they had a child care center in which they had about 80 infants, and every morning they put each infant into a cardboard box on the gymnasium floor, and the workers went from box to box feeding children all day. And I think that that's sort of the epitome of what we should not do with infants. And I'm very pleased for us to move forward with this. It doesn't use any general fund. But the framework of the bill does allow them to apply for both federal and private funds, and because it's so exciting, we think it'll be successful in that effort.
Thank you, Representative Rob. Any comments? Questions? Senator Metzger.
It's just a question of the carrier, Representative Ross. I'm very pleased to see the bill move forward and was fascinated by the seminar that Senator Bryan held earlier in the session. Were there any discussion by the department as to and if their expectation that there may be federal funds and other grants available to actually help expedite the
They had several sources they were going to explore and pursue. I was not in a position to really rate how successful they would be. The University of Oregon, however, was much more positive about their capacity to get additional information, additional support for their research activities, and that the framework of the school would help us. I, however, believe that because this is such an urgent issue and because research has produced some solutions, that there will be private foundations that will be designing and providing literature and materials that are appropriate for training, and that in the next few years we will move forward aggressively on this front because we'll see the benefits.
Thank you,
Mr. Sure.
Just to add to what Representative Ross was saying, Senator Gordley and Senator Harton both believe that they would take this news that this bill has passed to the Danforth Foundation and make a presentation there, hoping that they would get support. And they have discussed this issue with them previous to this meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Crow. Senator Farioli.
A question to the carrier. I was just wondering, Mr. Chairman, how many of the children raised in the cardboard boxes will have to become Texas state legislators?
Probably there were quite a representation of judges results of the activity in that line.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions? Are there any no votes on Senate Bill 870? Hearing none, passed. Senate Bill 1189, relating to enforcement procedures for water quality violations. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 1189 establishes an alternative enforcement pathway for companies or municipalities entering into consent orders on water quality violations issued by the Department of Environmental Quality. Currently, DEQ does not provide a public notice allowing comment or formal hearing opportunities on proposed water quality enforcement actions. This bill allows any person receiving an enforcement action to ask for a public comment and have a hearing on a proposed penalty. Public notice will include an opportunity for requesting a formal hearing on the part of the person receiving the enforcement action or any third party. The process will provide protection from third-party lawsuits due to the early involvement of the public in the proposed enforcement action. Cancer Research is subbed with the consensus from the agency and the interest groups added a two-tiered fee process to defray the cost of enforcement. For the 1999-01 biennium, the fee will be a $2,000 processing charge for a hearing request and a $3,650 actual hearing charge. If the public participation process does not result in a hearing, the hearing charge would be refunded to the person requesting the use of this new alternative process. Subcommittee approved $240,000 in other fund expenditure limitations and the additional one limited duration FTE. The department was directed to keep records of the actual cost of the agency in carrying out the provisions of the Senate bill and to recommend any changes in the fee structure to more accurately reflect the cost of the program. Cancer Research Committee recommends approval. And in anticipation of questions, the fee was supposed to defray the entire cost of the program.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Any questions?
Sure.
Yes, Senator Fisher.
Why such a big fee? Yes, there's no. It looks like the fee would not be anywhere near that amount. Maybe it should be more if it's still came down to the hearing or other lengthy process.
Mr. Chairman, the Senator brings up an important point. The two-tiered fee process, the $2,000 initial fee was designed to reflect the actual cost of preparing for a public hearing, getting the appropriate notices published, setting up the hearings process. If in the process of doing that there was a resolution of the issue, then they would not be requesting actually holding the hearing.
And so the second tier, the $3,650 actual hearings charge, that reflects the cost of impaneling a hearings officer, getting a venue, publishing the appropriate notices again, et cetera. So the two-tiered cost would be, the first would be reflecting pulling together the information and preparing public notices and allowing a public comment. If it does go to a formal hearing, then there's a second tier of that fee would be available or be required of a person requesting the hearing. If there was no formal hearing, there would be a refund of the second part of that fee back to the requester.
Okay, thank you, Senator Farioli. Senator Fisher? Senator Eklund, thank you. Are there any further comments? Any questions? There ain't no vote. Hearing none and seeing none, Senate Bill 1189 is passed. Senate House Bill 2183 relating to disposition of petroleum load fee, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2183 transfers funds currently held in three Department of Environmental Quality accounts to the general fund. The funds are to be transferred, and they are monies that were originally collected for a fee established by the legislature in 1989 on loads of petroleum. And it was used or designed to fund a financial assistance program for owners and operators of underground storage tanks that would be holding motor fuel. The Attorney General advised us in 1994 that the underground storage tank financial assistance package is not an appropriate use of petroleum load fee revenue. The amount to be transferred includes the originally collected fees plus the accrued interest. The estimated transfer of $3.2 million has been assumed as general fund revenue in the revenue forecast used to develop the governor's recommended and the legislative recommended budget. A similar action was taken last session to transfer the petroleum load fee revenue held by the Department of Revenue to the general fund. The Natural Resources Subcommittee reviewed the information that since 1992, the legislature has provided $9 million in state funds for financial assistance in the efforts to upgrade underground storage tanks. This, in fact, represents a decision by the Attorney General that load fees were more akin to a tax on gasoline or petroleum than they were to anything related to the storage of petroleum underground. And the interpretation is that the money cannot be used for that program and therefore must be returned to the general fund.
Okay, thank you, Senator Farioli. Senator Fisher.
Was there anything to discuss about why if there's considered to be road taxes, it wasn't sent over to ODOT with a particular project in mind and have them do that, or if I meant the general fund, then even though they put up money, we didn't put up the money, at least I know my part in this didn't depend on getting this back from the road fee reading into the general fund. So if you
Mr. Chairman, that issue did come up. We discussed it rather thoroughly. Just some investigations of the similar transfer that was done in 1994, I believe it was. The issue is, according to the Attorney General, that there isn't a significant connection between where the money was collected and how it was to be spent. And we did ask if these things, if there wasn't a sufficient connection, did it in fact relate to roads? And the opinion was that no, it didn't relate to roads either, but that the fund that was collected needed to go back to general fund as early as it was. I think the other thing to keep in mind is that the $9 million that we expended for financial assistance to upgrade the underground storage tanks was a general fund appropriation. So it's appropriate to return these dollars back to general fund.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Any further questions, comments? Are there any no votes on House Bill 2183? Hearing none and seeing none, it's passed. House Bill 2186 relating to underground storage tank permit fee, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2186 extends a $60 annual fee on underground storage tanks for 2 years.
the fee was scheduled to revert to $35 per seat at the end of 1999. Mm-hmm. The higher fee was initially authorized by the 97 legislature and charged on underground storage tanks to owners whose tanks have not been upgraded as mandated under the federal regulations. Under House Bill 2186, the fee will be applied to all tanks. The bill will generate an additional $330,000 in other funds, and that will be used to support the two existing conditions of the Department of Environmental Quality's underground tank compliance program. The fee will revert back to $35 per tank January 1st, 2002. House Bill 2186 represents one piece of the solution developed by raising means for a set of oil and petroleum issues facing the legislature's recession, and the committee did recommend approval of House Bill 2186.
Thank you, Senator Perriolia. Any questions, comments? Senator Bryan.
Mr. Chair, does this solve the problem that in part we created in the closing moments of the 1997 session?
Senator Perriolia?
Mr. Chairman, he asked you that question.
I guess a different. I can remember that at about 4 o'clock in the morning.
Different issue?
There's a different issue on that.
Okay, then I'll withdraw the question.
Okay, thank you, Senator Bryan. Are there any further questions or comments? Are there any no votes on House Bill 2186? And then seeing none, it's passed. House Bill 2319 relating to unlawful financial transactions. Evidently, Representative Minnis is sick this morning. And she is excused. Representative Weston, would you carry that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 2319 came to Ways and Means from the House Judiciary Committee on Criminal Law, where it passed out by a unanimous vote. House Bill 2319 creates two new crimes. It creates a new Class B felony for laundering a monetary instrument and a new Class C felony for engaging in a financial transaction in property derived from an unlawful activity. These new crimes are also included in the definition of racketeering activity for possible prosecution under the state RICO statute. The Public Safety Subcommittee reviewed the bill along with the fiscal impact and amended the bill to appropriate approximately $118,000 to the Emergency Board for allocation to the Department of Corrections, if necessary, for population management issues. The Public Safety Subcommittee unanimously recommends your approval.
Thank you, Representative Weston. Any comments? Questions? Representative Roth.
I wanted to ask the Courier if this created any problems for the members of the Human Resources Subcommittee, or any danger of imprisonment on our part because we've been in collusion with the federal government and the governor's office on laundering nursing home payments?
Not knowing or wanting to associate with any of the members of the Ways and Means Human Resource Subcommittee, I'm not able to answer your question.
Thank you, Andrew.
Any further comments, questions? Are there any no votes on House Bill 2319? I'm seeing none passed. House Bill 2406 relating to land use. Senator Perriolia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 2406 extends the sunset of the Regional Problem Solving Program of the Department of Land Conservation Development until June 30, 2003. The program was established as a pilot program during the 96th special legislative session with the intent to address fiscal land use issues on a broader, more regional basis. The House Bill directs the department to develop a computerized database capable of producing countywide maps showing the diversity of Oregon's rural land. Databases is also to include various types of land use information, including soil classification, farm use, and plan and zone designation. Natural Resources Subcommittee appropriated $200,000 for the Department's base funding for regional problem solving to the Emergency Board. The agency will report to the Emergency Board in November on a work plan and financial plan to implement the development of this database. The agency will determine what information is currently available and seek additional funding for the project. The committee recommends approval of House Bill 2406. Colleagues, we've been trying to get a rural lands mapping project off the ground for several years now, and this is our opportunity to see that project through. The issues that we discussed included connectivity between various users and also getting the appropriate scale and technology so that this database created will be usable at all levels of government from local through our state government. Good for us.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Any questions, comments? Any no votes on House Bill 2406? None, and seeing none, passed. House Bill 3107 relating to heating oil tanks. Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 3107, House Bill 3107 directs the Department of Environmental Quality to adopt a heating oil tank program to regulate the decommissioning of heating oil tanks. The program includes the procedure to license contractors to provide heating tank services and also requires the pump out of all remaining oil when use of an underground heating oil tank is terminated. The Natural Resources Subcommittee provides $240,000 in other funds, expenditure limitations for revenue from the contractor license fees, and added a $300,000 appropriation from the general fund. The combination of these revenues will support four full-time equivalent positions in the department to provide the program with oversight, field inspections, and technical assistance. The agency estimates there will be 1,100 home heating oil tank cleanups and 2,250 tank decommissioning in the biennium. House Bill 3107 represents a part of the solution developed by Ways and Means for a set of oil and petroleum emissions facing the legislature. Colleagues, there are literally hundreds of thousands of home heating oil tanks in Oregon that will, over the next decade, need decommissioning. This is a mechanism for licensing those that would do the decommissioning, create the revenue stream to help defray the cost of administering the program and create the positions within the department to administer the program.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Representative Schrader.
Just a question on that. We had a program to do this prior to the end of last session, and was there any general fund money to lend into that program at all?
I think that was completely defunded, but I'm going to defer that. I'm getting a nod from the staff indicating that was also defunded.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, at the end of last session, Senate Bill 1143 was passed, which was to do a similar type of program to this, and it was designed to be funded from an assessment on home heating oil sales.
Okay,
further
questions, Representative Schrader?
And on the, I'm reading the text of the fiscal statement, it's my understanding that the general fund money is supposed to drop off as the program gets going. Is it going to go away altogether? And if not, what's the remaining portion going to be used for?
The discussion that we had in the sub indicated that we would watch this program over the next few years and revisit it at near the end of the biennium. The estimation is that there will be many, many more decommissionings as time goes by. Most often these decommissionings happen in connection with the transfer of real property during a real estate sale when the disclosure that there's an underground heating oil tank on the property. The testing is done, and then usually there's a mandated decommissioning at that point or a replacement if the individual wants to maintain the home heating oil. This is going to have to be looked at again as this program goes forward. We estimated the number of tanks to be decommissioned based on the previous several years' decommissioning. But I think that probably as we go through this process, we'll see additional volume of decommissioning. So we're supposed to track this, and the Department of Environmental Quality will report back to the appropriate subcommittees if there needs to be an assessment. What we did primarily was provide a revenue expenditure limitation that would appropriately accommodate the fee revenue that would come into the program.
Okay, thank you, Senator Ferrioli.
Just a comment then on the bill.
Sure.
Yeah, prior to last session, we had a good, I think, industry-based program that was I thought working not too badly. Others thought not working so good. I guess I'm just a little concerned we're now into using general fund into this type of program, but on the explanation of the chair of the committee, I'll support the bill out of full ways and means in anticipation that we'll look at this, work closer to the industry, and see if we come to a little better mutual accommodation in the future.
Thank you. Sure. Further comments, Representative Leonard?
Isn't this a different issue than what that's been referenced here a couple of times, the bill that died in the middle of the night? It was more of a fund that subsidized the replacement of the tank for the homeowner. This is more certifying those that actually do the replacement. It's different.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The other thing is that I'd like to point out that the agency has got the full cooperation and full agreement with the industry. So this is not just a an agency program. The one of the effects of the last action that was taken in the last legislative session was to move this program from the Oil Heat Commission into the Department of Environmental Quality, and that is where, you know, this issue resonates. But the decommissioning and the funding and the fees and the certification are all being done at the cooperation between the agency and the industry. So I want to make that clear.
Okay, thank you. Further questions, comments? On House Bill 3107, are there any no votes?
3107.
Seen and passed. House Bill 3204, Representative Co-Chair Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 3204, as amended, requires the Health Division and the Department of Human Resources to adopt rules and develop a program to reimburse compensation program providers for services provided to persons who are not insured for smoking cessation costs. The funding for the bill comes from the Tobacco Settlement Agreement of 1998. Prior to implementing the program, the Health Division is required to report to the Emergency Board about the proposed program and rules and request the necessary statutory limitations. Additionally, the agency is required to report to the governor and various legislative interim committees about the program as part of its biennial tobacco prevention program report. In its current form, House Bill 2007 that prescribes the use of tobacco settlement funds is estimated to provide about $280,000 for smoking cessation programs during the 99-01 biennium. This amount, according to the Health Division, could be used to purchase vouchers for smoking cessation programs, such as nicotine patches or counseling or support groups. The vouchers could be distributed through the Health Division's existing smoking quit phone line. Callers would be screened by quitline counselors and offered the vouchers. This procedure would keep the Health Division's administrative costs of the program low and enable the agency to absorb these costs with minimal budgetary impact. In addition to the $280,000 tobacco settlement funds, the Health Division expects to spend $100,000 of its innovative and demonstration project funds to augment the tobacco settlement funds. The Human Resource Staff recommends that.
Thank you, Representative Lewis. Representative Ross.
During subcommittee, we talked a little bit about the need to evaluate this program, and could you just briefly review what the resolution is on the evaluation?
The agency, the Health Division, is going to start out with using some of its own funds, 100,000 of its funds from its demonstration project, and they are going to try to come up with the best procedure for doing a smoking cessation program using the quit line and evaluating the people that come into the quit line. And then they will then write rules and report back to taking report. they will adopt rules on provider eligibility, and they will report on the proposed program and that rulemaking to the e-board before we release the tobacco settlement plan.
And what is the expected timeline for that?
June 30, 2000 to report back to the e-board.
So they will do the pilot and set up the structure this year, and then beginning next year, if they're all ready, then they will have the funds released to the e-board to continue this. I'm pleased to support this measure. I think that there was a lot of work in the original idea. There's a lot of criticism because some people felt it was unworkable and wouldn't be practical and wouldn't reach smokers who really are actually ready to stop smoking. And so I think that LFO staff and the staff of the department, as well as the advocates for the measure, are to be commended for coming up with something that I think can really add to our education program. And I just want to thank you for your work on this, and I'm happy to support it.
Mm-hmm. Great. Mr. Chairman, Senator Hanner.
There's a house bill that we have over in the House side, 2007, to lock up the tobacco settlement monies. What is the position for the funds for this if that bill were to pass?
If House Bill 2007 passes, House Bill 2007 has currently 10% of the tobacco settlement fund, the interest on the tobacco settlement fund, going to tobacco prevention and cessation programs. And that's where we are estimating that that interest this biennium is $280,000, and that's what we can use in addition to the $100,000 that the health division is going to use from its existing dollars. It would use that $280,000 interest.
So it's only be the interest, not the principal.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator
Respectfully, because I know a lot of hard work went into this, and an interesting concept, but it's my feeling, and I'm hearing a lot from constituents, that this is not the most cost-effective and best way to use these funds, so I'm going to be a no on this one.
Okay.
I think it's really important. I want to point out to individuals who have maybe heard from people and have letters in their file that the Dash 4 amendment completely changed the bill. So you may be reacting to what the original bill was because the original bill used some of the money that is set aside for educating. And that the health division comes forward in $4.2 million. It just doesn't use any of that money. So I just wanted to explain that to members who might have had communication from people.
I think I still have objections. I don't think this is the best way to go at getting tobacco cessation from a lot of folks, and I think we can spend the money better than this, although I think this is effective. If we were going to pay somebody for a treatment that had been successful, I think 6 months is a little too early, maybe wait 6 years if they're not back smoking. I think that I'll vote no on this.
Okay. Any further questions, comments, Senator Fisher?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Comment and question. I think this money goes to the program, not to the individual.
That's
as
right.
I recall, I clarify that just a little bit. That's the question. Was there any discussion as to how private insurance or insurance coverage pays? Do they pay up to $600? Do they pay it up to 3 times? Same individual, do they only require a 6 month cessation?
Well, Senator Fisher, first of all, you part of the confusion on the $600 was that was in the original bill, and that's not in the bill as amended by the Dash 4 amendment. We did spend a lot of time working with the health division on this, and the payments will go to providers or people will be provided through the quit line. The quit line will be used to really analyze whether a person is ready to quit or not, and then the quit line will be used to authorize people to go to authorized programs that the health division is going to work on when it does the demonstrating intervention and the process of writing these rules. There's no more language about $600 per calendar year in the bill. And the health division testified that they do want the opportunity to let an individual have more than one opportunity. Because it does take a long time sometimes to quit smoking.
Any further questions, Senator Crowe?
I think I am operating off of information relating to the original bill, and
I guess I hadn't heard about the changes. Is the health division supporting this? Is this something they believe is positive and will be useful?
Yes, the health division is supporting the bill, and as I said, they have even offered to, because the interest monies from 2007 will not be available till the second year of the biennium, and they have offered to do their demonstration project with $100,000 of their existing dollars so that we can evaluate the programs that will be available and find out what's effective and then write the rules and report that to the e-board in June 3, 2000.
What about some of the lung associations, some of those groups that are now supportive of the bill?
Right. I don't think that they testified, but they were the ones that were objecting prior, and now we have changed the bill. So I do believe they're their main concern.
I'll go with it and investigate it. I'll vote for it here, and I'll investigate more before the
table. Representative Ross.
And I think that Senator Crow's reservation about the original bill were justified. I think that people can still have reservations about this approach, and that's why I think we need to emphasize the evaluation aspect. If we never try anything new, we never get any place. But I think as we move to new things, we need to be careful, and that's why I'm very supportive of the bill, because it does start slowly, gives them a chance to set up the structure and to work it out in a way that it will work, and then to use the interest from the max settlement funds to carry forward. So I'm very supportive of this approach, but I also think that, like other new things, we need to evaluate it carefully and make sure that the mechanisms support the idea.
Okay, thank you, Representative Ross. Any further comments or questions or any no votes on House Bill 3204?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to vote for it, but I want to declare a conflict of interest since I believe I'm the only one on the committee that still smokes.
We
didn't get you.
Well, we need you to.
And I don't need your something.
Bill for you, Senator.
Yeah, we hope this bill.
Okay, there are no votes on House Bill 3204. Passed. House Bill 3575, Department of Revenue, relax. Representative Butler.
House Bill 3575 is Eddie Gross, establishes the new Eastern and Western Oregon Forest Land Assessment Programs and phases out the timber harvest privilege taxes for affected forest land. This bill appropriates $360,000 of the Department of Revenue to form a work group to study the forest land appraisals, valuation appeals, and small forest land owner tax audit deferrals. This bill came from the House Revenue Committee, where it was unanimously approved. The bill requires the Department of Revenue to identify forest lands and ownerships of 5,000 acres or more as large ownerships, and ownerships of 5,000 acres and smaller as small ownerships. The privilege tax on timber harvest from large ownerships will be phased out and replaced with a property tax. Small ownerships may elect to be assessed under the new program or may continue to be taxed on timber harvest. The bill has a 3-year phase-in period. The subcommittee has requested the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule $260,000 of the appropriation until the Department of Revenue has documented to the Emergency Board and the Department of Administrative Services the need for the funds for the working group. The subcommittee recommends approval of 3575 as Ann Gross.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any questions? Comments? Representative Schrader.
I assume that the $360,000 dispute resolution fiscal will go down over time as the jurisdictional and optional options are taken by the group either to stay at the current system or go.
The 360 is a one time to facilitate both the study and the examination, as well as the whole work group concept, and then to finish up with the modification to those that are 5,000 acres or more, those that are less than 5,000 acres.
Okay, thank you. Further questions?
Sure.
Comments?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Lennon.
So the revenue impact this biennium, actually this biennium,
is 1.7 million.
That would have been discussed in the Revenue Committee, Mr. Chair.
I guess I'm just asking if that's accurate.
Okay, do we have staff that can answer that question?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct.
That had a revenue impact.
And next is 16.8 million.
I don't have the right for me, but
I guess I'm reading the right.
Yes.
Okay. Further questions, comments?
Sure.
Yes. Mayor Curl.
I don't know whether the governor has sort of fitted that in. I don't know where this is. It's a tax expenditure. There are a number of tax expenditures we've been dealing with, and all of those keep mounting up for subsequent biennia. And one of the things that we're all concerned about are those rollover costs that impact what's going to happen in the biennia to come. And this is one of those. I think I'm going to vote no on this, and I don't know, has the governor taken any stand on this issue? Does anyone know that?
I'll probably wait until I get to the floor.
I think Co-Chair Lewis. Representative Butler.
I believe the industry has worked this through with the governor, and he has approved this concept, and that it's my understanding that that this bill is acceptable to him.
Okay.
And he's familiar with the tax shift concept that was happening.
I thank the representative for telling me that. I'll vote for it here and reserve the right to vote against it on the floor.
Okay. Thanks, Ben. So, any further questions, comments? Are there any no votes on House Bill 3575, Representative Lewis?
There are no votes, but I think maybe I need to declare a potential conflict of interest. I do own some timberland that is baby trees, and I think under a different program, the problem is not affected by this.
Okay. Any other comments or conflict defenders?
I have a tree in my yard.
Take care of those.
Okay.
You used to have one that fell from my head.
Are there any no votes on House Bill 3575? Hearing none, and seeing none, it is passed. House Bill 3602 relating to pesticide fracking, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the final class today. House Bill 3602 establishes the pesticide sales and use practices to be administered by the Department of Agriculture. It's part of a pilot project of the Wilson Pesticide Use Database, including information about the location of applicants, the name of the product used, the quantity applied, the purpose of the application, and the month of the application. Tracking system applies to pesticides used in the ag, forestry, industrial, and urban sectors. The measure also requires the appointment of a pesticide stakeholder working group to advise the department in the development of the pesticide use tracking system. The tracking system is financed through a $10 increase in pesticide registration fees collected by the Department of Agriculture for 2 calendar years. The committee added $180,000 other fund expenditure limitation to the department's budget for the additional fee revenue. The committee also approved an additional $50,000 in general fund to partially support a full-time position, one FTE, and the pivot department for the biennium. And another $50,000 in general fund was appropriated to the emergency board for the pesticide tracking program for release to the department after the stakeholder working group is established and a report on the tracking system is provided to the e-board. The measure also authorizes a fee increase of $40 beginning in year 2002. The additional fee revenue can be used for implementation of the pesticide use reporting system only if the Legislative Assembly appropriates an equivalent amount of general funds. Colleagues, this bill had moved out of our subcommittee. We had communications from the governor that he thought the full funding would be necessary for his support of the bill and his opposition to a potential initiative that might be brought. We brought the bill back to our committee. We put in $100,000 and a half an FTE, and I believe we fulfilled all the obligations and of full funding for this bill. We also heard testimony from the open group that indicated that they also would support this bill if it were fully funded, and that they were far less likely to bring an initiative if this bill were fully funded. We believe this bill is fully funded, and we have brought that bill back to the wisdom, foresight, and generosity of the co-chairs. Thank you very much for that action. And added these dollars, which we feel makes this bill an excellent bill, meets all the governor's requirement and satisfies the agreements that were brokered with Open and the other proponents of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Farioli, and for your work in this bill. It's a compromise that will work. Representative Roth.
So what's the bottom line on the general fund cost on this?
$100,000 is appropriated, $50,000 directly to Departments of Agriculture, and another $50,000 in reservation, a very, very specific reservation in the e-board that will be released when the working group requests that it be reported out as a result of their work to establish the tracking. Plus, Mr. Chairman, we also required the department to tell us how they were going to deal with the management information systems requirements for this bill. They indicated that the current system that was available at the fire marshal's office would handle the MIS requirements through this biennium, and that they would make hardware, software, and program time available to get this system up and running at the next biennium, and that they would be reporting to the legislature what the requirements would be. But we have full assurance that their management information systems needs will be met by the agency. So MIS has covered an extra $100,000 and an extra half-time FTE to meet the requirements for full funding.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I want to compliment very sincerely the chair of the committee, the co-chairs, all the stakeholders involved in this, Oregonians for Food and Shelter, Open, the governor's office, some state agencies, fire marshal. I mean, everybody involved. This is an excellent example of how legislation can be crafted with diverse interests and very opposed views, and this becomes a shining example of the legislative process at its best. So I'm thrilled that this bill is here, and I heartily endorse it. And again, I compliment all the people involved. This is how it should be done, folks.
Are there any no votes? Hearing none and seeing none, House Bill 3602 is passed. House Bill 3606, relating to pollution control, tax credits, Senator Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 3606 allows pollution control facilities used in certain paper and pulp mills to participate in state pollution control tax credit programs. The measure only applies to the certification of pollution control facilities made after January 1, 1999. And expands the type of taxpayers allowed to take the tax credit to include contract purchases of the certified facility. The pollution control tax credit allows a credit against corporate or personal income taxes equal to 50% of the cost of the pollution control facility. The credit can be taken over a period of 10 years, and any unclaimed credit in any given year be used in any of the next 3 years. The investment must be certified by the Department of Environmental Quality to be eligible for the tax credit. The subcommittee discussed the fiscal impact and noted that the measure would likely only apply to one facility in the bleach craft paper industry. The Department of Environmental Quality is authorized to charge a fee of 1% of the certificate value on applications for pollution control tax credits. The agency was directed to seek an other funds expenditure limitation increase from the emergency board if needed. Your general government subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 3606.
Okay, thank you, Senator Yeet. Questions? Senator Metzger.
Yes, question to the carrier. Senator Yeet, on the credit, does the credit apply for pollution control facilities that are required by law, or is this in excess facilities that provide pollution control in excess of federal standards or state standards?
Senator Metzger, the pollution control tax credit would only be allowed if it's required. This is mandated by federal government plus the rules, and they have a very tight timeline. The company at issue here has a $35 million improvement they have to make by year 2001, and this is going to require a real investment. And the company has been facing a loss of $17 million last year, and this will help them build the facility under contract for the tax credit given to meet the timeline and keep the company going.
Thank you.
And I know I visit with folks from the company about this, and certainly concerned about the business environment and also keeping most people on the job. I am concerned, though, about applying tax credits to things that are already required and not as seamless things that we, as all business people, have to do, providing credits for those. I think we have to be very careful about that. I'm going to vote yes in the committee on this, but I'm still undecided on the floor as how I vote on it. I said we have to be careful about the types of credits that we issue.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Metzger. Any other comments, Senator Crow?
Sure. In the subcommittee, I asked a series of questions about this because I wanted clearly on the record as to how the company was going to go about doing this. And I reluctantly voted no in the subcommittee. I think I will vote yes this time for two reasons. One, I'm very concerned about the jobs that are there, and I want that company to continue to operate into the future. I'm also concerned about the fact that they do have the most advanced technology for pollution control that they can possibly have because they dump stuff into the Willamette River, and the river is the source of water supply for Corvallis, and it's going to be the source of water supply elsewhere. And so, drinking water, that is. And so we want it protected at the highest quality possible. So I'm going to support this. I'm a little concerned about the kind of precedents established, and I do agree also that I think we ought to begin to get out of the business, basically, of subsidizing pollution things that are clearly required by law and are not above that in terms of performance. But I think it's very much needed, and this is a good company. I think it has a very good record with regard to what it's tried to do to keep its pollution control.
Okay, thank you, Senator Crow. What's Senator Mesley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to make a few comments regarding this bill. I think that the open paper industry has probably taken more hits as far as some very, very severe costs in complying with the environmental laws the last few years. It's been very difficult for them. Down on the South Coast, we have an IP mill in Gardner that is closed, and I think it's about ready to be dismantled. We have another mill in Coos Bay on North Spit, which is just barely hanging on, and they're also struggling with maintaining their environmental regulations. I think this is an environmental vote. You will not, either you're going to lose the industry, or for the industry to stay in business, they have some very severe expenditures, as we heard in committee. And I just think this is a creative way to fund some of these upgrades so that they can continue to employ 300 people. That's, in my opinion, it's simply a method of financing their upgrades. So I urge you to vote.
Thank you, Representative Mesley. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure that it was clearly stated and placed clearly in the record that the company now presently meets all pollution requirement standards. This is not a company that does not meet the standards. It meets all of the required standards at present. I believe it was in 1998 that there was a group of rules called the cluster rules that were implemented. It must be met by the year 2001. This 3606 accommodates the equipment, which will bring it well within the standard of the cluster rules and within the timeline permitted. so that we've got a company that's presently in compliance, and we want to encourage them to continue to be in compliance so that we have an environmental friendly a bill here before us.
Thank you. Senator Fisher.
Just a question, if I could, to Representative Messler. Isn't the mill in Coos Bay primarily using and recycling station?
That could be. I believe that's true.
And it is pretty important that we have a place to take care of our people to be recycled, and we can do the help on that process. Accomplishing things. I'd like to take care of our recycling station.
Okay. Further questions, comments? Are there any no votes on, do you have anything further to say, Senator Yee? On House Bill 3606? Okay, if not, it has passed. House Bill 3617 relating to surplus refund disposition. Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 3617, the A engrossed version, would allow personal and corporate taxpayers by checking a designated box on their taxpayers' income or excise tax returns to donate any ticker refund or credit to state school funds, company, elementary or secondary education. The general government subcommittee discussed the minimal fiscal impact on the Department of Revenue to implement this legislation. The subcommittee made no amendments to this bill. It unanimously recommended the approval of House Bill 3617A in gross. The bill had passed the House on a 44-4 vote, and urge your passage.
Thank you, Representative Patrick. For the question?
Yes.
Senator Fisher.
Does this allow, this donation, does this allow those funds to be counted as a donation?
Question?
Or is that process bypassed and there's no credit for the donation given to the increase?
It would be within the normal donation scheme. It doesn't provide any additional donation amount by checking them.
Senator Chico.
Well, I mean, there's stipulations for donating things. How could this be a donation? That would be a write-off. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about, Senator Chico, writing it off?
Well, you're not writing it off.
I mean, this isn't...
The donation of
does public and elementary and secondary education qualify as a donation?
Representative Patridge?
Mr. Chair, this doesn't create any special donation. You'd have to receive it in as income. It would go out as if it was an eligible as a donation, depending on what the tax scheme was at whatever particular time. And it could be a donation. If it doesn't qualify as a donation, it wouldn't, depending on how it was. Depending on what our tax code was at the time.
Yeah.
Okay, there, I guess what I'm trying to say is, what is our tax code?
Well, if the tax code allows it, it should be deductible on your income tax. If the tax code doesn't allow it, well, then you wouldn't get the deductible.
Chair? Is that correct?
Well, let's talk to the CPA. But
depending upon whether or not you itemize your deductions in the ensuing year, It could be a charitable deduction in the ensuing year because this is a qualified organization. The municipalities in the state of Oregon, so it could create a tax deduction in the ensuing year. But you may also have income in the ensuing year. That is the excess refund from the prior year would walk. Could potentially most time walk.
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can the donor of this specify what elementary or secondary school this goes to, or will it just go through the state formula?
It'll go through the state formula. It was too much difficulty.
Yeah.
There's too much difficulty in trying to designate each particular school. We'd have a lot bigger revenue impact.
Why don't
we
tell them just to write a check?
So it'll go through the formula. Otherwise, we can. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand.
What's the administrative cost of handling this deduction through the Department of Revenue for money that would go into a general distribution? So as an example, school district XYZ would receive so much money. To receive that much money, what was the cost of the administrative function to generate that much money? Do you have any estimate?
I don't have an estimate. They felt that there would be really no cost. They're going to be distributing it to individuals or school districts. They distribute money to individuals and school districts anyway. This is prospective, so if there is a kicker, then it won't. Then it will be distributed.
Okay. Further questions, comments? Are there any no votes on House Bill 3617? Let the record show that Senator Shuteb, Senator Hinn, and Senator Troll are noes. 3617 is passed. H.J.R. 35, proposed amendment to Oregon Constitution relating to spending limitations for state government. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Senate Resolution 35 proposes an amendment to the Constitution to place growth limits on general fund appropriations. The proposed constitutional amendment would limit the increase or decrease of biennial general government appropriations to the rate of increase or decrease in Oregon private sector personal income. Your general government subcommittee amended the measure to include an emergency clause. If approved by the voters, the appropriation growth limit can be exceeded by the legislative assembly by a two-thirds majority vote of all members of both houses. The amendment also clarifies that the proposed constitutional amendment applies to aggregate appropriations as opposed to line-by-line or program-by-program appropriations. The amendment also reduced the potential fiscal impact by allowing the measure to be placed before the voters at the next regular biennial primary election. In the event that there's no special election this November. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval of House Senate Resolution 35 as amended.
Thank you, Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This potentially is the singular most seriously flawed piece of legislation this legislature has seen this session. If this were in the Constitution, had been in the Constitution, 10 years ago, beginning next biennium, we would have $2 billion less to work with. The increased spending in the general fund is almost totally attributed to the shift of responsibility for funding K through 12 from property taxes to the state's general fund. We received testimony in our subcommittee, general government subcommittee, from the state treasurer that some of you may have read about. The state treasurer's office got up and said, if this were in place, it potentially could cause the state to default on some of its bonds. The majority leader from the House got up and said to the treasurer's office, it's too bad your budget's already passed. That's his response to their concern over this resolution. This kind of provision in our state constitution, in my opinion, would cripple state government. It ignores population growth as a factor. It ignores some of the real impacts on the poor of this state who pay taxes and their property taxes, who pay gasoline taxes and other taxes that aren't affected by this. I guess I can't overstate all I can say is the irresponsibility of this resolution, and I would hope that we would kill it right here.
Thank you, Representative Leonard. Senator Kutem.
Actually, if I understand this correctly, it has been amended. I'm glad I looked at it. But when you take into account the state private sector income level, which is what this bill measures the spending limit based upon, that's like actually discounting your income. And deciding what it is you should spend your money on. And that would, the private sector income is going to take into effect by virtue of the fact that we're counting the income, any population changes. Because presumably people will be working to support their families, and therefore you're going to figure out, you're going to find out through that measurement really about population. And I think this is actually safer than the population type thing. This is in the statute, by the way. Has been in the statute, I think, since 1983. Maybe saying that incorrectly, but in the 80s, I believe, or late 80s. So we're just simply putting in the Constitution what exists in the statute right now. So it's interesting that the treasurer would bring that up. It isn't, because maybe it was ignored earlier. The statute was ignored by earlier legislatures, but in the most recent history, it really wouldn't have affected us that much, because our income, the private sector income, rose. Therefore, the state spending ability rose with that private sector income coming back. So it's really kind of a safe measurement. I don't see it as irresponsible at all, because the taxpayers who pays the bill for government, and it's essentially based upon their income that we are measuring.
I have a procedural question.
Yeah.
First, I'm looking at a major summary that says B and gross, and I haven't seen anybody with the B and gross version of HR 35, including in our staff. So I don't know if that's when Senator Kutub mentioned it had been amended. I scrambled looking for a different version, and I don't know if that's a misprint on the major summary or we actually don't have the B and gross version.
We don't have. What I see in the HGR 35 is recommends the A and gross bill. And we have the A and gross bill and the A and gross amendment in front of you.
Mr. Chair, members of the city, if it is a misprint on the staff measure summary, it's the A and gross staff amendment.
Is it the A-12 amendment?
With the A-12 amendment, yes.
So the A and gross has the A-12 amendment?
It does not have the A and gross. It does not have the A-12 amendment with it.
Is it not incorporated?
No, it is not.
Okay.
The amendment or attached behind the agenda.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I don't know whether this is responsible legislation or not. I don't care to argue that, but I do think that it's not good tax policy, and I think that it can have very detrimental effects. I do think that the Treasurer's Department was brave in coming before the subcommittee to say that this can have an effect upon your bond rating, and it really can, because this is a kind of straitjacket that we're putting into the Constitution that limits our ability to respond to emergency situations that we may have. It's a little better since it was amended, and there is an escape clause in it that allows a two-thirds majority vote, but it's still that getting that kind of a majority vote is very difficult, and it's a kind of straitjacket I think is going to be very harmful for the future. We have had an expenditure limitation since 1979 or something like that. That expenditure limitation wasn't needed when we had recession and we had to retrench, and we retrenched tremendously. But once we got out of that period and we needed to rebuild services and to fund education and to do some other things, that expenditure limitation stood in the way of doing that. And since we had that expenditure limitation, we have all kinds of things done by initiative here that suddenly adds to what we need to spend our resources on, like all of the prison construction and the prison operation now that's going to come because of initiative measures, plus the reduction in the property tax revenues that paid for schools and other things, and the shift onto the general fund of those activities. Those kinds of things are going to continue to happen when you have a system as volatile as we have. If you put this straitjacket around us with this expenditure limitation, you're going to complicate our ability to respond. We're not going to be able to respond.
and we're going to be in serious trouble. And that's why I think that you'll find, boy, if you want to improve bond rating, you're not going to get it if you do this. In fact, you may lose the kind of bond rating you have by the current
plan.
I do feel this is really poor legislation, in my opinion. And I really do think it is a litmus test of us knowing in the committee, and it does come out of this committee for sure. I think we have to take a real broad view of this. This is not a partisan issue. I did ask LFO if the numbers referred to by Representative Renner were measured at all by the modifications to the AIM growth version, and they are not. And let's just think of it for a moment. Had this been enacted 2 years ago, we're looking prospectively. I think someone had done this to us here, or we do this to someone else, we need to look at that. You could have that been done, and we'd be looking instead of $10 billion and $100 million budget, we'd be looking at $8 billion, $126 million prospectively from the numbers from the Department of Revenue. And no matter what your personal budget might be for this session, just think how you would balance your budget, no matter what your personal budget be with those kinds of dollars. The growth of income is important. I'm not certifiably smart on a lot of number things, but I do know that that is not necessarily the only measure that we would have a responsibility, and most importantly, future legislators. We won't be here when these effects would really be felt. It's not just private income, but it's also the demand on state services. And, how do you calculate that? And it was indicated about property tax. Yes, we had these limitations in effect. When we were paying 3% for school funds because the property tax was paying that. We have more demands placed on the legislature that are irrespective of personal growth that were not previously there. If we, in fact, take this position, years down the road, we are going to scrap really the citizens of the state. And I don't know how any of us, would be balancing a budget of $8 billion right now here, no matter what, how conservative we all wanted to do on certain programs. It would not be possible to see. I would just say, they're very serious witnesses. I can see why it would feel good at some point, but we also have a tremendous responsibility, and I think we would shirk that with this referral. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Other comments, questions? I think we have a roll call vote on this. House Joint Resolution 35.
Representative Bob?
No.
Westman?
Aye.
Beverly?
Aye.
Leonard?
No.
Slater?
No.
Cutler?
Aye.
Patrick?
No.
Lewis?
Aye.
Senator Chisholm?
Aye.
Hammond?
No.
Is?
Aye.
Crow?
No.
Bryan?
No.
Terrioli?
Aye.
Fisher?
Aye.
No. Aye. Nine ayes. It is failed.
Mr. Co-Chair, I changed my vote to no and submitted the cost for reconsideration.
Okay.
We do that. Does our rules do that, Mr. Chair?
Can we do that with
our
rules?
Is that okay?
It just
fails
to move forward. It's
still
before
you
let the record show that House Joint Resolution 35 has failed. Okay, we have one other item. It has to do with adoption of conflict amendments. Recommendation. Co-Chair Lewis, would you make a motion in regards to that?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. We have conflict amendments on some bills that were previously passed out of the full committee, and you have before you conflict amendments on Senate Bill 911, Senate Bill 1202, and House Bill 2465. And I would move that we adopt all of these conflict amendments in that. I made a motion. Adopt
the conflict amendments. Thank you for your motion. Is there any discussion? Any questions? Not. The adoption of the conflict amendment passed.
Chair, I would once again move Senate Bill 911, Senate Bill 1202, and House Bill 2465, as amended by the Conference Amendment to the appropriate floor.
Thank you. St. Louis. Any comments, questions? For all the members present, we are planning our party, a little boat trip on the Willamette River and the Willamette Queen for July 6th. I know there's conflict. We've tried every date you can think of, and it's just gotten to the point where we're saying July 6th, and that's it. And we hope every one of you can come. And I understand it's just a great event. The water people did it earlier in the session, I believe, and we sure want all of you to thank
the day earlier as previously announced,
right.
And there will be transportation from the Capitol. There
will be transportation from the Capitol by bus and then back. You arrive, you leave here at 5:45, and you will get back here at approximately 10 p.m. Thank you. Media